But my question to her was, how are you going to call out racism if you can't speak to people on the street? You know, like, it's levels to this, you know? And so I need you to work up on just being able to say hi to people and make eye contact so I can eventually get you to the space of calling out the racists in those spaces.
This is the Bris Poinsett Show. This is the Bris Poinsett Show. Oh, the world's most dangerous infomercial. I'm your host, Bris Poinsett. Along with my producer, Ada, we bring you this weekly commentary and interview experience from the Numbers FM studio of the Portland Art Museum. This is the best of the Bris Poinsett Show, the world's most dangerous infomercial. I'm your host, Bris Poinsett, and along with my producer, Ada, we bring you this weekly commentary and interview experience from the Numbers FM studio of the Portland Art Museum. You can catch the full show every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on the Numbers FM 96.7. You can also catch clips on youtube.com/Bris Poinsett, plus exclusive bonus content on patreon.com/Bris Poinsett. Make sure to follow us on twitch.tv/TheNumbersFM, that's numbers with a Z, or the Numbers Podcast Network on thenumberspodcast.com. Again, that's numbers with a Z, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, y'all, this will be part two to Bruce and Shannon Pomerantz's conversation on Race Talks.
I mean, I think that's the other thing I was hoping to kind of like bring out in this conversation. It's just like, there are little nuances, little like, one just from like people's experiences and perspectives, but just like, I think we all have in our mind how this is supposed to go or how the conversation's supposed to go. You know, we've read the comment threads and everything, but when we really get to like talk about our experiences and we really get to talk about, again, just those little nuances to it, yeah. I think it's just very informative. And in this discussion, again, like I said, we're not able to cover the whole ground. We're not able to solve the tensions right in there, but my hope is it gives people, again, opportunity to just like see themselves and see their experience. Even when you talk about just walking around, because like I vacillate, honestly. Like I'm, again, just my own social nature.
Yeah.
Like I move a very visible social anxiety. So sometimes I'll be around, it's like nods there. Sometimes it's just like,
right,
I don't know. And sometimes I'll give and not get it back and be like,
Thank you for reminding me. Like, social anxiety is a thing. So sometimes if people aren't looking up and making eye contact, it's like, you know, interestingly enough, to segue back to our conversation about anti-racism and white allyship, my mom was interviewed by a woman who has a blog called Hagsters. And looking at her, I could tell, you know, she's a woman of color, you know, kind of white passing woman of color. And so we started talking about, you know, what she could do to be more actively engaged. And I said, well, you know, at Race Talks, we always say, you know, do you know your neighbors, you know, three in front of you, people next door, both sides, and not just like by name. Have you been inside each other's houses? You know, do you have each other's numbers, know each other by name? And she was like, yeah, I know a couple. And I said, well, do you speak to people on the street and say hello and make eye contact? And she said, well, no, I feel like that's so invasive. And I'm like, well, as women, you know, if you go through any kind of sexual assault prevention courses, making eye contact and speaking to people is kind of the first step to avoiding an attack, because your attacker is less likely to come after you if they know that you're aware of them and, you know, can see them and anticipate and then pick them out, right? But my question to her was, how are you going to call out racism if you can't speak to people on the street? You know, like, it's levels to this, you know? And so I need you to work up on just being able to say hi to people and make eye contact so I can eventually get you to the space of calling out the racists in those spaces. And it was like a light bulb moment, you know? And so I think just being able to be in space with each other, communicating, doing all those things, we need more of that. We need more spaces. And I do think as confrontational as the Black Portland space has gotten, Solomé pointed out the fact that it's a small town here. And whenever I meet new people, especially Black folks in Portland, I'm like, listen, it's like being at HBCU campus. We all know each other. We related to each other. We've slept with each other. So whoever you're going to talk about is going to talk to that person. So whoever you got issues with, be very careful about speaking up too loudly about it, because we all coexist and you never know when you're going to have to circle back to these people and have to, you know, be in space and work together or whatever. And so I heard her say something to that effect, which is, we don't really have the option to not get along. We can't just be out here beefing. It's not enough of us. And so I feel like the pandemic forced us into a space of connecting online because we needed it. We were isolated, but also it forced us to have conversations that we weren't having with each other. And the fact that you've now created this film, you know, and it's inspiring people to have more conversations, I think is just absolutely wonderful. So I'm thankful for you for doing that.
I mean, thank you. I really appreciate that. Two goals with this beyond just putting it out there is, one, to hopefully inspire, not just having the discussion, not just this particular discussion, but
yeah,
you know, being able to like build with each other and explore these things and, you know, hopefully be able to like do it in a space that, again, it's not just the most toxic internet thread, preferably, but right. Maybe, you know, if that's where it happens, it happens. But then also for, because I know people, just going to, again, put the spotlight on the whites here. We're going to look and say, okay, so what does this have to do with racism and white supremacy?
Yeah.
And what does this have to do with us?
What does it? And it's what, like, does it have to do with that?
The fact that, like, as Black peoples, Black Oregonians, white supremacy is literally dividing us. Mm-hmm. Has and is literally dividing us. And, like, it, when we talk about what is affecting Black quality of life in Oregon, that's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, if I look at specifically in this case, like funding from the Community Storytelling Fellowship that helped put it together, when people ask, like, how can I be an ally? And I kind of recoil with the word, not because of the definition itself, but just because, you know,
yeah,
terms become just like talking points and like buzzwords that yeah. stop having any meaning. But that aside, when people are like, you know, how can I be an ally? Like, support this, like, mm-hmm. don't just support, you know, anti-racism or DEI work where, you know, there is a deliverable for you.
Right.
Which I don't think a lot of people think about. Like, it's cool if it's like, oh, I get to participate in a discussion, I get to be there. But what about the stuff that people need that doesn't involve you, that's still very important? Support that too. And my hope is that there'll be people watching this and say, oh, that's a way I can contribute. And, you know, support more spaces like this, whether it's, you know, obviously for Black Oregonians, I want right. to get more investment in that because we're in a situation of mass and continuing and aggressive divestment.
Yeah.
So I would like to spur that. But just when it comes to a lot of these issues, like, just want people to support the wraparound stuff, not just like the stuff that makes, as someone who worked in the news, I noticed that people support stuff that makes for like good pictures or good videos mm-hmm. or entertaining things. But some of that stuff, like, yes, we made a video out of this, but a lot of this work, a lot of what's needed is like a lot of like wraparound stuff that isn't as glamorous or necessarily made for a TV show, but it's important.
Can you expand on that? What is, when you say wraparound, what does that look like?
So yeah, like community building. For example, with just even putting this together, again, like, it, we made it into a video to, you know, distribute and show to people, but this could have easily also just been a discussion behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I think when we talk about community building work, facilitating spaces, like, especially with like stuff I do in schools,
mm-hmm.
you know, I see this need for like just spaces, not just for Black students to gather, but to feel safe.
Yeah.
Some schools, you know, they have more of a population and like, you know, that BSU space is respected, but that's not always the case, especially when you get out in these suburbs, where even just being able to gather and be with each other is a problem, or it's like, it's a struggle. So facilitating more spaces for that, facilitating this stuff again, like, you know, being able to pay for food so people can, mm-hmm. you know, it's not just showing up. It's also being nourished literally in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
So when I say like wraparound, I just mean, again, all that stuff that's not necessarily comes with like this clear deliverable or this clear product, but is important just for making it work and making sure people are taken care of.
Right.
So we just talk about, you know, food and space, but it's, I don't know. It's kind of like,
if you
want to
dig in deeper in terms of compensating people for their time for showing up, or just how their businesses or their organizations need support. I mean,
also, I just want to, because you mentioned compensation, sorry to cut you off there, but also making sure that with this, we're able to pay people for their time being there, not just like, you know, people working behind the scenes, but people on camera as talent, because that's important. Again,
absolutely. So, I'm getting exposure to that. You know, we had the first 10 years of Race Talks was primarily funded through volunteer efforts. You know, white folks stepping in saying, hey, I see a need. So we had somebody, Joe Anybody, who actually works here at the museum, I believe, but in his free time, you know, would come to Race Talks, videotape our segments, uploaded on YouTube, you know, did editing. For 10 years, you know, and for a $50 food card that we, you know, got from McMenamins. And then Teresa Horney created a website, you know, to post it on. Mom had no idea any of this was happening. So by the time I showed up, I'm like, did you know you have a YouTube page and a website? And, you know, like we could be utilizing these things. And so, you know, as we step back into the in-person space, I've started utilizing OpenSignal as well, and finding out the very real costs of like what equipment costs and what it means to have someone come in to do it. And it's like, oh my God, this is really expensive, you know, and editing costs and the time it takes to sit down with the editor and figure out what you want your product to look like and all the things. And so I think, you know, again, that's all time, that's money, that's cost. And then honorariums for people who are coming to speak. If we're trying to remove barriers by bringing people in for dinner time, you know, having food cards available so we can provide food for people. So all of that has a cost to it. So it, a lot of times people think, oh, it's free. No, it's not free. Free is not transfer. It's free to you because it's important to us to make sure that folks are coming in and able to be in the space and not have barriers, but there is very much a cost. And so I think what I hear you saying is looking at it in a way that's very responsible to say, just because this is a passion project, I can't expect people to show up and work for free. You know, they had to go to school and get educated. They had to buy their equipment. They have, you know, real skills that are being brought into this effort. I have to show up and be able to do it. And so the fellowship is great, you know, but one thing I did notice in the viewing, you got different camera placements, but there's one camera moving around. Mm-hmm. And so my question to you is, have you been able to finish the final editing with the other, or is that something that's still in play for you, or are you fine with this as a final cut? Kind of what's your process there?
Yeah, so I'm just be real about it. Like, it's definitely something where, so there's two kind of like outstanding things about that project right now. One is that video, as far as like actually being able to utilize the other camera angles, mm-hmm. and not just Ifanyi on the roaming camera through there.
Yeah.
Although I think that was one of the good things about working with Ifanyi and OpenSignal Labs is that, you know, he gave me enough to work with that effectively, like, I'm not going to say he idiot-proofed it for me. But in a lot of ways, honestly, I feel like he made it so it's like, even if it's just left up to my devices, I can use this so I can make, put out this discussion.
Yeah, if you don't do nothing else with this, you know, you've got something. Yeah.
But yeah, it's, I have two between that. And then I mentioned the Eastern Oregon trip because that's the video that still hasn't come out yet. Mm. And if I'm being real about what I want to do with that one, I want to actually get it, work with an editor to get it, you know, to make it into something that can be shown at the airport. Like, and I know a lot of the parts of the process to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I got a quote on, you know, what that project would cost. So
can you share with us? Cause I think it's important that people understand like real numbers when we talk about like producing content like this about ourselves.
Yeah. So the number I got, and this is not to get it directly into the airport, this is just to get it like, you know, edited.
Yes.
You know, professionally edited down to that kind of, you know, short feature, high quality thing. It's $5,000.
Yeah.
So, and again,
that's like hours of footage into like what, 5 to 15 minutes if it's for the airport, because you're not looking at like an hour long.
Probably not even 15, like maybe 10 at like top level, 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But again, it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
Even with like, I do, you know, do a little bit of patchwork editing to get some stuff up. And I know how much time that takes me. Never mind, again, trying to like really not just put the stuff together, but get these transitions right, get the coloring right, get all this stuff to, again, make it a full production. So, you know, part of what I'm doing, if I'm being completely honest with the people, is like, I want to get the information out there. For me, just journalist background, everything, if I can get the info out there, that's my thing. But also, that's why I think it's important. And I try to like collaborate with people who, you know.
So what I'm hearing is we have an editor's quote. We need a benefactor to come up with a 5,000 plus so you can get your project edited. Now that's just on the Blacktastic rural Oregon trip, right? But but what is there more editing that needs to happen for the dinner conversation movie?
Well, I mean, the editing for that is just kind of like what you mentioned before, where it's just incorporating the different camera angles. And
so we got an ask out here, people, for 5,000 to 10,000. We need a new editor. Well, not new editor. It sounds like we got an editor. We need money. We need a check.
But So with,
and if somebody wants to send you a check, Bruce, where do they send it?
Well, you can find me on Venmo and Cash App at Bruce Poinsett. Thank you. Thank you for the plug. We'll do this at the event as well. I just want to say with the, I guess with my priority with those two is the Eastern Oregon one, just because, and the reason I emphasize the airport, like not just like with the dinner, I'd like to have, you know, a more fully polished video.
Yeah.
But also my goal from the jump with that was always, I wanted people to engage with the full conversation if I could do it that way. So it worked out in a way where it's like, I can engage people with the full conversation. In this case, you've provided me with a captive audience, so I appreciate that. But with the Eastern Oregon one, it's just like, I think when I think about where projects like this are screened, not just to, it's one thing to like reach out to the audience locally and like basically like who I made this for, because it is a conversation for us.
Yeah.
But I've also learned just being out here, it's not like a uniquely Portland or Oregon thing, where people take the local thing more seriously when other people start paying attention.
Yeah.
So I want, also, it's just, there's so many beautiful shots. But it is a
Portland thing. I mean, the fact we have billboards that said there are Black people in Portland. I mean, I think having representation at the airport that lets people know we here, you know, and we're not just in Portland. We're all over.
And like, I mean, Wallowa County was, you know, we're recording this on May 18th. Wallowa County just voted the same place where the Maxville Heritage Interpretive Center is located. Like, they just voted for further consideration to become part of Greater Idaho. Like, that's that's the place we're talking about. And for obvious reasons that, you know, it's a big headline, it's a big story about the place. They did a Daily Show segment last year kind of about that movement. But it's important, again, that people know that in this same place, you have, again, an institution of not just Black history, but primarily, well, this isn't even primarily, but like history of Black loggers and the logging community, the diverse logging community as a whole in Oregon, mm-hmm. founded, run by a Black woman who grew up out there, who wow. went through so many things, honestly, out there. And Gwen Trice.
Shout out to Gwen.
Yeah. And it's just, it's important that people also know that, because, you know, oftentimes yeah. when we see, oh, they just voted to secede to Greater Idaho. Well, yeah, those white people should go there. But it's like, there's some, like, we're maybe not in large numbers, but we're out there too. And in this yeah. particular case, it's not just people just happen to live and work there. It's a person who's like the keeper of the history.
Now, we're talking about specifically Eastern Oregon, but where, what's a city, you named the county, oh, but what's so, a city that yeah. people would kind of associate with this?
So, yeah, the Maxville Center is located in Joseph, Oregon. And so that's where we interviewed Gwen for that series. And then we also were in Pendleton, interviewed man Leon Ransom about, well, one, his experience, but then also kind of like Black cowboy culture, because, you know, it's Pendleton Roundup and all that atmosphere there yeah. as well. And it's like, again, it's just so much history and stuff. I've been going on so long, I don't want to.
No, actually, as you're talking about Gwen, you know, most of us have seen each other over Zoom, right. you know, for the past few years. And we were called in. So one of the things that we do as Race Talks is we also do consulting facilitation. And so for the Meyer Memorial Trust, Oregon Justice Black Lives Initiative fund that they were creating, we help facilitate conversations of Black Oregonians around how could this fund be used. And I remember Gwen was there, and, you know, it's probably 40 or 50 of us in this conversation. And she just started crying. She got so emotional. She was talking about what she does with the Black Pioneers and just the different work that she does. And she was just like, I am so emotionally overjoyed and overwhelmed right now to see so many Black faces. And it just, I think that that's something that often in the scope of my work, I come in contact with Black folks all day, every day. So when people say, I never see Black people, I'm like, where are you? You know? And so I get where she is. There's very few of us, but I also look at Portland and I'm like, there really is no reason why you shouldn't be seeing Black people every day, because we're here. Now, I don't know if you're looking for us, you know, there has to be some intentionality to go find folks and meet folks and put yourself out there. And I get that in cities like Atlanta or Chicago, where Black folks are everywhere, you don't have to, you know, be as assertive, but I feel like it's definitely worth the effort to figure out where are the Black folks so you can really prioritize being in space with each other here. I almost feel like I see so many Black folks here in Portland that I'm like, where's everybody else? You know, it's like white folks and Black folks. I'm like, where are my Asian, Latino, where are my other folks here that, you know, growing up in California, our cultures are so rich. But I will say, Bruce, that this idea of being born and raised here versus being a transplant is a universal conversation right. that transcends just the Black community. I feel like I hear Black folks, white folks, Asian, Latino, you name it, Indigenous, I don't care who you are. If they're born and raised here, there's an emphasis on I'm born and raised here. I was on such and such street, I remember, mm-hmm. and not just kind of in our age group, but like I hear 70, you know, folks in our mother's generation who are like, I'm born and raised here, you know, and white folks and Asian folks. And so there's, I feel like this conversation, while the cultural and racial significance really is to Black folks in Portland, or in Oregon, the reality is it's a universal conversation. So I'm really excited that you're coming to Race Talks. Second Tuesday in July, we're going to screen the movie and then we're going to have breakout discussions. So it's over dinner, so folks can come and have dinner. All ages are welcome. And folks will have a chance to kind of dive into the conversations with each other about what it means to be a transplant versus being born and raised here. So I'm super excited that you get to, is this the official premiere?
Yeah. Yeah. This is the live premiere. Obviously you mentioned before it's available on YouTube. You can go watch youtube.com/Bruce Poinsett now, but in terms of like actually premiere in a space.
Yeah.
And I think so great about doing it with like the Race Talks format is just being able to not just watch it, but actually have a discussion with people. Cause like I said, again, my ideal going in with it was I wanted to, if I could have people engaged with a full conversation and actually discuss it, actually, you know, actually get into it. You know, obviously I think in this sort of like media environment, you know, mm-hmm. I understand you talk about just, you know, trying to like keep up with podcasts earlier where it's hard. Like there's so much content out there in most cases. And I've been glad that like I've gotten a good response with just like, I've clipped a few, probably like 4 segments, I want to say, out of the dinner for social media.
Nice.
You know, and I think I've gotten a good response on those because I know that that's where most people are going to see this. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where most people are going to engage. And I love those 4 minutes of the conversation, but to really, again, just like get the full thing, to really experience it and to be there in a conversation with other people at the table afterwards, I think it's going to be really powerful. And it's like, I'm really excited about that. So yeah, thank you again.
Absolutely.
For having me for Race Talks.
Absolutely. And I hope you make sure to let everybody who is affiliated with the project know that they should come. You know, I think it's exciting to see your face up on the screen, but also, you know, not to put them on the spot. You know, it's going to be your show. So I'm going to be equally surprised about kind of what you have set up for us when we arrive on that day. But definitely, you know, all are welcome, you know, who participated in the project, who are subjects, who, because it'd be very interesting to see how their thoughts have evolved, you know, what kind of feedback they've gotten from doing it. Have they hosted their own dinner parties, you know, which I would definitely encourage folks that, you know, if you're trying to meet people in community and build space, like, host a dinner party. We're starting to do more things in public, or go to a restaurant and invite people and, you know, see who shows up and see what kind of conversations you have.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I just think it's, like I said, it's, if it encourages people to kind of just, you know, build community with each other and, you know, seek out some more of these just like relationships, like intentional relationship building, then again, we will have accomplished our job. And so, yeah, you know, absolutely. Just look straight at the camera. July 11th, Race Talks, McMiniman's, Kennedy.
Oh, I do have a camera right there.
Not Kennedy Center.
It's McMiniman's Kennedy School. We're going to do it in the gym. We thought about doing it in the theater, but yeah. This way we have the ability to do our more intimate breakout roundtable conversations following the movie.
And it's better to eat.
And it's better to eat, right? Because one of the things, you know, mom always says is that we have Race Talks over a meal, because anytime you're talking about issues of race, you know, the eating food helps alleviate any indigestion that, you know, comes from you know, getting into it with folks. So, yeah. So Bruce Point said, thank you for being my guest today on your show.
Yes, thank you for taking the reins as the interviewer this time. And again, July 11th, McMiniman's Kennedy School.
Yes.
Miss Maxie's and Miss Poinsett's children coming together, making conversation happen.
Absolutely. See you there.
Yeah.
The Bruce Poinsett Show will be back right after these messages.
Help support this channel and get early access to videos plus exclusive content and patrons-only live discussions by becoming a member at patreon.com/Bruce Poinsett.
Welcome back to the Bruce Poinsett Show.
This is the Bruce Poinsett Show, the world's most dangerous infomercial, and we're about to wade into some potentially dangerous waters. So, big news a few weeks ago that Phil Knight, Phil and Penny Knight, but you may have heard of Phil before, owner, founder of Nike, multi, what was he, $45 billion, something like that. He has a lot of money, carries a lot of political influence throughout Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
He recently donated $400 million to the 1803 Project, led by Rukiah Adams. Shout out, Rukiah.
Mm-hmm.
And basically towards this project, which is designed to specifically like reinvigorate Black Albina,
mm-hmm.
you know, serve Black community who's displaced in Albina.
Mm-hmm.
So that news was met with mixed reviews.
Yeah.
For a number of reasons. One, if you haven't been following Phil Knight recently, he's always been at best a moderate, more so basically like a Republican who may have identified as a Democrat.
Yeah.
But in the most recent 2022 midterms, he made a full pivot to just like, he is dumping his money into right wing causes at a time when you're like, what if you're curious about what the Republicans have been up to recently? Right now, I feel like it's day what? 12, 13 of a walkout to make sure legislation doesn't get passed on gun safety, abortion access,
right,
transgender issues.
Wow. Yep.
So, yeah, that's what they're about.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just that he's dumping a bunch of money into Republicans. He just put 2 million more in April.
Yeah.
Never mind all the money he threw in the midterms.
Mm-hmm.
But it's at a time where extremism is high, where a lot of Republican candidates align with, you know, overt white supremacist organizations and movements.
Absolutely.
Like this week in another interview, we just talked about how Wallowa County in Eastern Oregon voted for further consideration to become part of Greater Idaho.
My hometown.
Yeah. Translation. White utopia. So again, when we talk about Phil Knight supporting Republicans, it's not just this innocuous, vague, oh, he wants to see something different happen. No, he is supporting
white supremacy.
Yeah. He's supporting those people.
Yes.
So when that same man gives $400 million to, you know, help Black people in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
There's some skepticism.
There's some fish.
There, definitely. I mean, also another conversation that has been happening is around the potential sale of the Blazers. Like, there's nothing, I think, nothing like fleshed out yet, but the rumor mill has been, and some of the worries, frankly, of people is that Jody Allen, who currently owns the Blazers and, you know, Allen family based in Seattle,
right,
might move the Blazers either to Seattle or somewhere else.
Mm.
Because with all professional sports teams are basically billionaire pet projects.
Right.
And at some point they always come to this crossroads where they say either renovate the stadium or arena and do whatever you need to do to all the space around it. Hint, hint. gentrification policies, massive gentrification, clear the people out policies, or I'll move the team.
Yeah.
It's happened. I mean, I think, you know, I think about the Brooklyn Nets.
Isn't that like what originally happened with the Portland Trailblazers?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's also the original story of Memorial Coliseum, the Portland Trailblazers, is building that over the Black community, the Black neighborhood there. But yeah, in more recent news, whether you think about like the Brooklyn Nets stadiums, what they did to get that going. Very recently, like the Oakland A's are moving to Las Vegas. Mm. The Oakland Raiders moved to Las Vegas a few years ago, I think. But yeah, like again, with this happens with every sports team at some point at that level. But, you know, this is where Phil Knight comes in, is possibly, I'm not going to make a white knight pun. Anyways, where Phil Knight comes in and says, I, as someone who, you know, grew up in Portland and want to see where I grew up be revitalized. Mm-hmm. And I want to help the Black community, gets to say, not just would I like to buy the Blazers and keep them here, but also I would like to reinvigorate, reinvest, revitalize the Rose Quarter. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what all could go wrong there?
More.
I don't know. Everything that happened before.
Right.
Possibly. Maybe Phil Knight, maybe the guy who's, again, billionaire, co-founder of Nike.
Right.
Guy who's donating a lot of money to Republicans who are, you know, not just dabbling, but full on cozying up to extremism.
Yeah.
Why would we have that guy, you know, fueling the revitalization of a historic Black Portland neighborhood? That, that said, there's a deeper thing here, because with Phil Knight and Nike, specifically Nike, a pretty well-known, I call it a well-known secret, whatever you want to call it, is that Nike has been funding and like doing a lot to like keep a lot of nonprofits that do generally good work afloat for decades.
Yeah.
Like not because they're a benevolent, wonderful company. Let's be clear. It's because one, it's just in donations. Yeah, get your money somewhere.
Right.
But two, a lot of people doing great work, a lot of organizations doing great work in Black Portland are also just faced with massive divestment and years of like a culture of divestment. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been aggressive, especially recently when you have, I believe there's 500,000 that was pulled from basically like the big five community organizations like Urban League, Latino Network, NEA, you know, Apano. Basically like, who's the biggest organization that serves this culturally specific group? Screw them. We're pulling the money from the city council. Let's
get the money away.
And then there was, they tried to do the same thing with the Reimagine Oregon and a specific Black led organization around justice and police accountability. And they only reversed their decision at the last minute, basically because it was, the media coverage was so bad that, you know, they were forced to change course.
Yeah.
So you have that at the city council. You have this push just in general of like, you have, when you talk about all the time, you have a lot of like white liberals who say they support Black people, support Black organizations.
Right.
But when it comes time for to put some money behind that, doesn't happen.
Silence. Complete silence.
So when you have these organizations, again, who are doing important work, feeding people.
Yeah.
Creating opportunities, you know, extracurricular opportunities for youth. And when there's no money coming in anywhere else, and Nike is the one who's stepping up to support you, what's going to happen? You're going to you're going to have a little bit more of an affinity for Nike. You're going to feel Nike a little check. Bit more inclined. Like if Nike does something bad or Phil Knight does something bad, not to really speak on it.
Right.
So when we look at this, I think the natural question that comes is like, is Phil Knight buying people's silence? I feel, you know, it's interesting because, you know, we shout out Rakai earlier, and a lot of the articles about this have really leaned into her as a board member of Albina Vision Trust. Mm. You know, full transparency, I've worked with Albina Vision Trust. I like them. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll just be, you know, honest with you watching. Like, I really do trust, you know, no pun intended, but the people in those leadership positions there. Now, when we talk about 1803, the organization that they donated to, mm-hmm. you know, I was reading an article in, I believe, the Portland Business Journal. I tried to pull it back up, but yeah, when I refreshed, I guess I'd gone through my one free reading and
it's vanished.
Yeah.
You know, do what you got to.
But they did list out the other board members, and they, you know, they talked about, now I'm forgetting his name, but Larry. Yeah, you know, I'm talking about Larry Miller.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've heard, you know, the long name. Time work with the Blazers, work mm-hmm. with Nike, big face. Talk about was it Tony Hobson, SEI? And so, like, some of these, again, some of these like bigger names or people associated with bigger Black organizations that people know,
right?
I bring up SEI specifically because when we're talking about funding or lack thereof, a thing that often happens with especially Black serving organizations is we are pitted against each other yeah. in all the things. And even though it could be a small, like 2 to 3 people operation, they might find themselves competing with SEI.
Right.
And losing.
Yes.
Oh, every absolutely. Single time. No shade to SEI. They're doing what they're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. But when we are pitted against each other for already, stress strained funding.
Yep.
That again facilitates more division, more stress, more anxiety.
More problems.
So now when we look at this, because in that same Business Journal article, they also talked about how their goal is to get to like $800 million to $1 billion.
Yeah.
So, you know, $400 million is a good start. But there's more to be done. And I don't even like balk at that number in terms of like, if you're truly trying to revitalize like Black Albina mm-hmm. and you're trying to like be serious about it, that's going to cost a lot of money.
Oh, so much.
I don't doubt that.
Right.
But again, let's say whether or not Phil Knight is actually planning to try and buy the Blazers and, you know, the Lloyd District, that remains to be seen, but we do know what he's doing in terms of like Republican politics at a very, mm-hmm. a very like gross time for Oregon Republicans, which is saying something because Oregon Republicans.
Yeah.
And I have noticed people who might otherwise talk about Phil Knight and some of these stories that have since come out since Speak that out. Donation announcement. I don't see it.
They got quiet on this.
I don't want to accuse anyone of anything. I'm just, because I'm not saying, you know, Phil Knight went to their houses and said, shush.
Yeah.
And here's the money. Like, no, no. It's more so of a, it's like an unspoken thing. Again, because when no one, when you can't find the money anywhere else to do this work that's important, and the only one providing it is this person, you don't have to make any explicit deal to kind of like get the message of like, I'm gonna leave you alone.
We have to
I'm not
bite gonna that
talk
bullet.
About your business.
The bullet has to be bitten.
Yet this is not a actually let me bring it back. In you know, in the spaces of nonprofits, the other kind of like well-known secret is a lot of the people who donate big sums of money are not great people.
Yeah.
So like, that's not, Phil Knight is not special in that regard.
Not new.
And a lot of people have to make, have to make concessions in trying to get funding and fundraising. But I just want to reiterate, especially for those of us who are not a part of 1803.
Yeah.
Not like Phil Knight, if you're watching and you like to discuss a price to buy me off, I'll entertain the discussion. I'm kind of curious, of what my silence would be valued
how at. How much is worth?
Right now, my guess is a zero, but so any number above that, you know, just be a boost to my ego.
We're talking, yeah.
But that said, I want to be hopeful that we can be in a world where we can do both things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I saw a lot of people when the announcement was made do something that was actually I like, in terms of really elevating and letting people who don't know Rakiah's story, telling them about that and talking about, look at this person just. This person secured a historic investment.
Right.
Like this person did a big thing. Like, fundraising is such an important part of so much of the work that a lot of people are doing.
Either.
And we need to lift that up. That said, I want to believe we can exist in a world where we can do both.
Yeah.
Where we can talk about how important fundraising is and lift up the people in the community who are having these huge wins, but also without having to, you know, especially when, again, we're not even financial partners of this and we're not part of the process.
Right.
I want it to be where we feel this unspoken rule to be silent about this and say, I guess, you know what? Phil Knight runs us right now, and that's fine. We can talk about anything else, but leave Phil alone.
Let's leave Phil out of it.
When you do that, that gives a man who already has more power than he will ever need, and everyone running behind him, especially right now, you know, these greater Idaho Republicans, like, we can't unknowingly or for good intentions of this other thing give them cover.
Right.
So I'm just gonna, you know, the bigger question, as so many of these are, is like, how do we make this money work? How do we really, you know, get the power so that we're not dependent on these people?
Yeah.
And I wish I had an answer for that. And if I did, I love the numbers. Love working with you, Ado, but I wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
I would be on tour.
Yeah, no.
And then I would retire because I would make a lot of money.
No.
With the answer to that question. So I just want people, again, we're in a situation of mass divestment.
Mm-hmm.
And I support a lot of people, a lot of generous, supportive people who, like, on a small scale are actually doing what they can with, like, the disposable income they can to, like, support people. And I love that. I want to see more. But how many of us, like, if we pulled all our resources, how not close are we going to be to $45 million or $45 billion?
Right.
Like, we're talking about power here.
Yeah, that's some real coin.
And we just got to, again, I wish I had a more concrete answer, solution to solve the problem, but we got to keep power in mind, don't let go of our leverage in the short term.
Mm-hmm.
And we can do all these things. Like, people secure donations, or people in community with people who secure donations and continue to push regardless.
Yeah.
And we can keep doing that. So if you're out there and you're like, and you've kind of, like, again, taken on this unspoken thing of, well, I guess we're going to leave. Actually, some of it's leave Phil Knight alone. Some of it, I think the thing that really got me was people were like, yes, Phil Knight should be the one to, like, we're really, like, getting behind, like, Phil Knight should be the one to lead this charge. Mm-hmm. And we finally got the right person here. And it was like, Ew. So don't do that. Don't do that. We can do both things.
Yeah, we can do both.
This has been the Bruce Poinsett Show. Again, you can catch us every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on the Numbers FM 96.7. Or you can catch clips on youtube.com/Bruce Poinsett. If you want access to exclusive bonus coverage, you can go to patreon.com/Bruce Poinsett. And make sure to follow us on Twitch at twitch.tv/TheNumbersFM. That's numbers with a Z. Or on the Numbers Podcast Network on all podcasting platforms, or thenumberspodcast.com. Again, that's numbers with a C.